Hey everybody, and welcome to the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. This is episode number 49, and the fact that you're hearing this means that I have survived the Goldberg tour thus far. Two shows down, one to go, and I'm joined here by my American partner in crime. He's ran midget wrestling, he has found a bespectacled woman to share his life with, and he has now fulfilled his bucket list dream to go to WrestleMania, where his least favourite wrestler of all time beat his favourite of all time. It's David J. McCutcheon. Hi, David.
I didn't know Bret Hart was wrestling, but hey, everybody, how's it going? I hope that you're doing well. I'm full of positivity today. Positivity, Kenny. It's just pouring out of my glands like sweat on a hog in July in Mississippi.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
In case you're wondering, that's a new day. Yes, it is. Hogs can't sweat, Kenny. So I'm not full of positivity at all. I'm sort of undermining you with my knowledge.
I was not my knowledge
of animals.
I was not allowing you to get the one up. That was what I was doing.
My distinct knowledge of farm animals as an American.
It was purely a my dick's bigger than your dick situation. I just want to say, gotta
get him in when I can.
I just want to say very, very quickly, first of all, here on the podcast, there was a wrestling magazine called PW Mag who had decided to put a tweet out saying that, charging £140 for a photo with Goldberg was a ripoff. And that's fine to tweet that. First of all, you're fucking incorrect. Because it was £137. But, second of all, what you got for that, you non-knowledge motherfucker, was you got a two-hour show, you got a photograph and an autograph, and you got a whole experience with Goldberg. And everybody that's came to that show has been very, very happy. And I've tried my best to make that as reasonably a priced event as I can. And I take umbrage when anyone says that I'm in any way trying to rip somebody off. So to the gentleman who runs that no good rag site that chose not to check with us before putting out a snide tweet, go fuck yourself, sir. From me to you.
He's in the magazine business, Kenny.
He's booming right now. He's not in the magazine business. He's in the I have a Twitter page that says mag. Business. He's one step away from being an egg.
So basically, he doesn't run a magazine, therefore he cannot sell ad space, but he still promotes himself as a magazine, is what you're saying. He doesn't have a website, he's just giving away all of his wonderful inside knowledge on Twitter for free.
I don't want to cast aspersions here about anybody, David. That's not what I'm here to do. But all joking aside, go fuck yourself. But all joking aside, thank you to everybody who's come along to these Goldberg shows and who has paid their money, because I really appreciate it that you have chosen to pay any of your money to come to one of our shows. I can't ever really explain how hard it has been to put these shows together and how many hours and how much real agony and sort of sweat and nerves it takes to get this to this stage. But I'm very thankful for everybody who's came along. I wouldn't have been able to do any of it without you guys and the team that we have around us, who are just magnificent beyond reproach. And I'm very happy that I get to sit down now with a nice vodka and Diet Coke and talk to my friend David about Raw. Isn't that right, man? David. Isn't that right, David?
it certainly is. Something that we will never be a part of is the Big Baller brand. Not so much due to protests or in any type of negative reaction to what happened on Raw. It's just that me and you, we're just not big ballers, Kenny. I don't think that we're worthy of the title Big Baller. What would you say?
So I was in all honesty, right? So we were doing the first show in Glasgow on Monday night. So when that show was done, and it felt like I was going to keel over and die because I'd been so stressed and it was so, and the show ran late and all that sort of stuff. So I basically fell asleep in a heap and I hadn't seen Raw. And then I got all these kind of tweets and stuff from people saying, did you see the Big Baller guy? And I was like, what? I have no idea what this is. And this is another example of, oh, an American sportsman. Oh, my God. I mean, right, who cares?
Right, right.
Who gives a fuck? And the outcome's LaVar Ball. Now, I don't know if in America that's a normal name. LaVar Ball? What the fuck is that?
It's always weird to me whenever people have last names with that are inanimate objects. Like, imagine LaVar Chair, right? LaVar Microphone. It's like, I don't know. And then, meanwhile, his name is LaVar Ball, and he plays basketball. Oh, that's branding right there.
Yeah, I didn't name.
He might, you know, that he had no interest in sports, and then he was like, "Oh, wait a minute! I can make millions of dollars by using my last name."
No, I need you to help me out here, because before we begin this, because I'm clueless on my American sports.
Oh God, Kenny, I know nothing about the NBA besides the fact that Shaquille O'Neal said "Yeah" on his podcast. But I'm sure you
heard that through a very, very reputable impression.
I have a first-hand account, in fact.
New Orleans next year would be good. But Shaquille O'Neal, who's going to be appearing at Slammiversary?
Oh, man, going from WrestleMania to Slammiversary.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, the news broke today via social media, and I think that we almost had to cancel doing the Raw Rundown because we may have had to devote an hour to the fact that Impact Wrestling has acquired. Now, I want you to define before I continue. If you've acquired something, what does that mean?
Whenever you acquire something, it means that you have purchased it. And like for instance, whenever I think of the word acquire in a wrestling sense, the WWE acquired WCW and therefore absorbed them and their film library. There's a fine example of someone acquiring something.
Okay, so and I would agree with you. That's probably the best example in a wrestling scenario of somebody acquiring something, right? Like that's
right.
That's...
It's a business transaction.
Exactly. It's a business transaction. So that makes sense. So today, Impact Wrestling has agreed to acquire Global Force Wrestling. Now, let me read you a little bit of this fucking press release because it's fucking laughable. Karen Jarrett says, I'm just allowing everyone to roll their eyes. Karen Jarrett says, we are thrilled to be joining forces with Anthem as a partner to build the business. Now, what that would be like is like a junkie going in to a corporate headquarter and saying, all right, mate, I'll fucking take this $1 million meeting and I'll fucking make you more money. Makes no sense.
It's like
trying to keep children safe in the home of a pedophile. It is ridiculous. It is the stupidest decision I've ever made. This is a company that for 3 years courted a television deal and didn't have anything to show. They had a couple of baseball shows. They sold mouse mats on the internet. They turned their brand into cash for fucking gold.
Kenny, can I ask a question?
Of course you can.
Whenever they acquire that, does that mean that they acquired all assets from Global Force Wrestling?
If you can find a fucking asset there, you're a better man than me.
I really want that spinning sign that says cash for gold that Jeff Jarrett always hawks at WrestleCons.
My God. So she
passed Jeff Jarrett whenever I was walking into WrestleCon this year, and he had that cash for gold sign just spinning it. Cash for gold! Cash for gold here! I tried to sell him my necklace, but he wanted to give me $3.50 for it.
But wait a minute, David. Wait a minute. You're not letting Karen Jarrett finish here. She's got a lot more to say. She continues. This partnership.
I apologize.
Yeah,
I apologize.
You should be. This is a woman of absolute zero talent. This partnership will be complementary of our strengths. And bolster our capabilities to grow the Impact Wrestling brand. Ed Nordholm is president. Fuck. And Jeff Jarrett is the chief creative officer. Make a great tag team.
Oh man,
that is like putting that is like putting AIDS and syphilis in a team.
You know who makes a good tag team? The fucking Hardy Boys. They make a great tag team. Would you not agree?
I would concur, sir.
Fuck's sake.
But don't worry, everything's all right, because here's what Ed Nordholm has to say, the president of Anthem. He says, we are excited by the progress we've made with Impact Wrestling since acquiring the business in January. Jeff and his team have been instrumental in this success, and we are pleased that we have reached an agreement to the basis of which we can combine our businesses to continue to grow.
So that's like whenever you pick up a dog turd and you pick up a cat turd and you smush them together. Is that what combining the businesses would be?
What I need someone to explain to me. Please, God, anyone in the world, can someone find me an asset of Global Force Wrestling? One.
Didn't they have a title? They had a title, right?
Here's the thing. Nick Aldis. Nick Aldis is a fucking great talent. He is absolutely tremendous. He's very underrated. He's old school.
Hey, a lot of those guys are very talented. He's We're not shitting on the people
who
work there.
And Nick is a more traditional wrestler, and I don't blame him for going where the money is, but he's too good for Global Force. To be fair,
fucking everybody is too good for Global Force.
They have a guy in a loincloth with tits. Congo Kong!
Hold on a second. A guy in a loincloth with tits. I didn't know that I worked for Global Force, Kenny.
Listen, I would much rather watch you than Congo fucking Kong. you can't do a cannibal in 2017. Nobody believes it. We're not in Memphis in 1985. You can't get Kamala out.
Imagine all of our progressive friends who would be just like... You're making fun of the.
Oh God, don't! I've already been branded as a sexist, so don't continue it. But anyway, I just thought we should break that news here in the podcast. The Impact Wrestling has acquired Global Force Wrestling. My mum once acquired diarrhea, and she was glad when she got rid of it.
Now, Kenny, uh-huh. Don't put this off on your sweet mom. Your sweet mom has never had diarrhea once.
No, it's funny. So I'll tell you a quick story about my mom before we go on.
It's, so long as it's not slanderous lies about a wonderful woman, then yes.
Okay. So when I was going to meet Goldberg on Sunday. And Goldberg and I had very pleasant interactions in the lead up to this, but I was very nervous about it because we're quite a small operation, and you know, I was kind of, you know, it's almost like, you know, when you go on a first date and you're like, oh God, do I look too fat here? And you know,
you only have one chance to make a first impression.
Exactly, Jeff Jarrett. So the Bill's on his way, flying to Glasgow, and I'm at the airport with Fiona, our lovely chauffeur, and I was more nervous than I've ever been about meeting anybody for wrestling, because this guy, and I'm not being a mark about it, it's just, you know, this guy is a big deal, and you want to make a good impression, because you want the shows to be good, and you want to have a good rapport and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, so it's like 10 minutes before he's due to land, and I'm really nervous. I'll phone my mum. Because she doesn't, like, get overhyped about any of this stuff, right? She's just very down to earth.
Of course.
So I give her a phone. I say, hi, Mom, how's it going? She's like, I'm good, how are you? I said, I'm at the airport waiting for Bill. And she said, oh, that's nice. And I said, I'm a bit worried, though. She said, why are you worried? And I said, well, like, what if he lands and he's a big prima donna or something, and, like, he doesn't like me, and I have to try and win him over, and all that stuff. And she was like, where is he staying? He was staying nearby. And I said, you know, he's going to arrive, we're going to get him in the car, and then we're taking him to the hotel, take about 15 minutes, and then she was like, what's happening after that? And I said, well, I won't see him again until tomorrow. And she said, well, here's the thing. If he's a prick, it's only 15 minutes in the car. And then you're fine. And then you can fob him off onto the rest of your team. That's what you pay them for. And I said, you're right, Mum. You're absolutely right. She said, don't you be taking any shite, Kenneth. Don't you be, you're not paid to take shite. You're absolutely right. So I'm all of a sudden I've got a big a puffed out chest. I'm like, aye. If Bill's gonna be a prick to me, I'll be a prick to him. And then out comes the loveliest man I've ever met in my life, and we're chatting away, and it's all fine. So anyway, the next night comes, and my mum is coming to see the Goldberg show. So she comes along, and she phones me, because everybody was being ushered into the downstairs bar because the screen was not working in the venue. And she phones me. She says, "Kenneth, I'm being held in a room." Said, "Where? Have you been arrested? What are you talking about?" She said, "I'm being held here against my own will." And I was like, "Where are you?" And she's like, they put me in this room. They won't let me upstairs." And I was like, "Do you mean the bar?" So I go downstairs, and she says she's been held in a room, like it's Panic Room with Jodie Foster. She was in the fucking bar with a drink, with a couple of my pals. She's sitting there having a wee tipple, and she's like, and I said, "Mum, you made it out that you were in jail. You're sitting here having a wee fucking cocktail." I said, "Well, I'm being held. It's in a room." I said, "Well, I think you misquoted how you really should have phrased that, to be honest." So anyway, she watches the show, and then there's a fucking heckler, and it's really annoying, and I'm trying to not let... I'm going to be more strict with hecklers. I know that some people want me to be, so I will do it from now on. But
sure.
He was just being annoying. I didn't really want to give him any attention. So anyway, this girl, Vicky, who's one of our like very regular patrons at these shows, she tells the guy to shut the fuck up very loudly, and everybody cheers her. So anyway, and then he tries one more time, and I just stopped Bill, and I said, "Listen, do you want to just shut up and let him talk?" And all I heard from the back of the room was, "Yes! Yes!" And it was my mum clapping and cheering like an absolute fiend. So then the show finishes, and my mum said, "Am I coming back to meet Bill?" I said, "Right, okay. Mum, remember the last time you met Scott Steiner? We're not having this again." So so she comes back, and she's with my friend Kerry, and they come in. And they go in, and Bill's like, I was like, "Bill, this is my mum." And he was like, "Hey, how you doing?" She was like, "Oh, Bill!" And she's way up to him, giving a hug. And they're chatting, and she's like, she's like, "I thought your story was very inspiring. Absolutely. How do you eat 15,000 calories a day? I just couldn't do it." Mummy was training for WrestleMania, not watching fucking EastEnders. She's chatting away, and then my friend Kerry doesn't understand what's going on. She's like, "You know, I know how you feel about the 15,000 calories, because I had to go to a spin class, which I lost 600 calories. And I'm like, what's going on? This is just mental." So anyway,
oh my God.
So then the worst thing is, so I'd arranged some lounge access for Bill in London during one of his layovers, and of course the fucking airline didn't give him the lounge access. I was like, fuck, okay, that's not a good start. Anyway, so I only found this out tonight, that my mum, when I went away to get something, turns to Bill and says, "So I heard about that lounge access, Bill. I heard about it." And he goes, yeah, it's, you know, and she was like, "Well, I'll absolutely assure you this. Kenneth did everything in his power to get you that lounge access. He thought he had it sorted. So, just you be clear of the facts here, Bill." Right? So she's telling Bill Goldberg the facts about the lounge access. And then she says, he was awfully worried. He didn't want to make a bad impression, Bill. Do you know what I mean? And he's nodding along, apparently. And then she turns around. She thinks this is a good idea to say, and I'm about to walk back in the room, so I don't know this is happening. And he kind of was like, "Oh no, you know, listen, you know, Kenny's great, really, really having a good time." And then there's like a silence. Apparently, she just turned to him and went, "I bet you felt like a right idiot though, getting turned away." What are you doing? Fucking baffling woman that she is.
Oh,
my mother, ladies and gentlemen.
Goldberg seems like a wonderful human being, though. So I'm sure that he had a fantastic chat.
Oh yeah, no, he was lovely. And my mum was just, and it's funny because Sondra, who's obviously here this week, she met my mum briefly on Monday. And my mum came round earlier tonight because she phoned me after work, and she was like, "What are you up to? And so me and Sandra just sitting, you know, having a bite to eat, watching some TV. And she was like, I'll come round because I want to hear the gossip, you know. So she comes round, she's chatting away, and she's like, so Sandra, what do you do? What do you do in America? Where in America are you from? What coast is that on? And, you know, she's asking all these questions.
Of course.
Get in the car afterwards, and she was like, I didn't want to ask this in person to Sandra, but what age is Sandra? She's 32. I didn't want to ask in person. That can be rude, you know what I mean? I was like, right, okay. Is she married? I was like, yeah, she is. Oh, that's interesting. Why is that interesting? And she was like, well, I just wanted to know. I was like, are you interested? Do you want me to put a good word in for you? What's going on? So, and I said to Sandra, I'll talk to Sandra about this on the SmackDown show, but I said, look, you know, I said, I'm curious. The way that I talk about my mom on the podcast, am I exaggerating her in any way? And she went, not one bit. She is exactly how you describe her.
So, accurate depiction of Mama McIntosh.
Big Fiona, that is how she rolls. Anyway, so from that, we'll go to the Raw rundown, I guess. So, Raw was in the Staples Center in LA, Los Angeles, California.
A place where I was just a couple of weeks ago. Whenever I would take the Uber down to work at the convention center, which is located directly next to the Staples Center, I would have them drop me off at the Staples.
And it's a great arena. It's a really nice arena. You were obviously there for E3 recently. Great pictures you had on your Facebook of that. I'm sure that you've posted some on Twitter as well.
That's in the convention center. Let's not confuse them now.
No, but it's still in Los Angeles.
It's still Los Angeles. Wonderful billion-dollar setups and whatnot. So if you are friends with me on Facebook, feel free to go and peruse those photos.
And if you are not friends with me on Facebook, it's because too many people that I added before message me constantly.
One of those deals. It's like, no, pal, we're Facebook friends. It's a lot like how I treat Kenny. I'm like, no, you're overstepping your boundaries here, fella.
Mm-hmm.
Bothering me at all hours on your messengers.
Mate, when I slide in, you get excited. Let's not lie to ourselves. Anyway.
Touché.
So this week's Raw opens up with Roman Reigns coming out to more boos than cheers, as always.
And, as always. Now and forever.
He talks about, you know, he's going to be facing last week with Samoa Joe. Braun Strowman returns. And he basically accepts the challenge to the ambulance match, and then all of a sudden, Big Papa Pump's music hits, and it's not Big Papa Pump, it's Braun Strowman. But the ambulance comes out, Roman Reigns goes to try and find Strowman. He gets blindsided, and Braun Strowman flings Roman Reigns off the stage, off ambulance, the side of the ambulance, to the ground, and then locks him in it and makes the ambulance drive away with him, and then goes onto the ramp and shouts, Braun! And I love him, I love him, I love him. I just love him so much, David.
I was really sad that this was the only segment that Braun Strowman was in all night, you know? Because, yep. Like, I don't know. It's sort of like sex without the foreplay, right? It's always better the longer it goes, Kenny. I don't know if you know that.
Not always, because sometimes...
Well, we're not talking about sunny Skype sessions.
No, but you know, sometimes you make that mistake, right? And we have younger listeners here, so I don't want to say anything that's too much here. But sometimes, what are you laughing at?
Just the setup. It's like a vague setup, and it's all like, this is going to end very terribly, and I'm going to explain why, and then you cut off and you go, No. Let's not get into how horrible sex can go.
Well, no, what I was going to say is, because you're saying your thing was it shouldn't be short, it should be long and enjoyable.
Right,
and my point was going to be sometimes we all in our lives have decided, you know what, we meet someone in a bar or at a party or whatever, and you go home with them for a one-night stand. And uh-huh. A romp. And the problem is sometimes, you know, what you see in the bar with the dimmed lights is not what you see when the clothes come off and the lights are on. So sometimes you want that to end before it begins.
And so, that, ladies and gentlemen, is how Kenny and I met.
The problem is.
I was really hoping you would go in that direction, and then not that way I could finish the joke exactly like that. And I'm like, oh, Kenny, thank you so much.
But the thing is, you know, and then some of us who decide to go back to that one night stand well a lot, wake up in the morning, it's like Silent Witness pulling the cloth back, like, oh God, look at the fucking state of that. too far?
Oh, too far. Yeah. We can dial it back. Or can we? Can we ever not hear that now?
I bet, but you know exactly what I mean, though.
I will say, both instances usually end up like Braun Strowman segments with an ambulance coming to take someone away. So that's
someone's very sure of their self.
Oh no, it's the other way around, mate.
right. Anyway,
my heart. So Braun Strowman shows up here though, and then just like nothing thereafter, right? Like it's there and then it's gone.
Short and sweet. Short
and sweet. But at the same time, he is like arguably the highlight on Raw these days. So to start with something, it kind of all goes downhill from there. You know what I mean? Starting out so hot with a personality that everyone loves. You know, it's sort of like those old Raws from the Attitude Era, whenever Austin would come out and then McMahon would have him arrested or something. And then it would be a continuation the week after, as opposed to that week, you know?
Do you know the problem with that is that Braun's not supposed to be the babyface here. That's where your problem's coming from.
Well, I will say this. If it were the Austin segment, Roman Reigns, if he were the actual triumphant babyface that everyone loves, would show back up later that night. That's the other thing. But more importantly, I saw a little girl wearing a Braun Strowman t-shirt in the crowd, and it made my heart melt. God bless that little girl.
You know, sometimes you really hope that if you have a kid that it grows up to be one of the Braun Strowman kids and not the Roman Reigns ones.
Me and Val have a pact, actually, whenever we have kids. She goes, if that little fucker is going to cheer John Cena, then you're dressing up as John Cena and going out there with him, and you got to fake cheer John Cena while I cheer on the heel. And I go, no, please don't make me do that. And she's like, no, bitch, I'm the boss of you. So she put me in my place.
Another lovely tale of Val. Attacked of a brick.
A heel fan and a heel in real life. But just like Braun Strowman, we all cheer for her, even though she's the bad one.
up next on Raw, we're going to get a segment where we have Elias Samson, Sheamus, and Cesaro all under a spotlight as if they're about to sing. And Sheamus looks horrified that he's even a part of this.
Do you think this was a rib? Do you think that they like sent them out there and were all like, all right, now you guys really have to sing? And then they were like, oh, fuck.
I really hope it was.
Given how terrified Sheamus looked, like, I think McMahon or somebody, Dunn, I don't know who, but I think somebody told them, all right, now you're going to go out there and you're going to sing with Elias Samson tonight. And then, like, right as they're about to sing, the Hardy Boys music hits. it's pretty brilliant. I really hope that's how it turned out.
So we end up with the Hardy Boys music hitting, and we get the Hardys and Finn Balor against Elias Samson, Sheamus, and Cesaro. There's a glorious moment where Finn Balor's on the second rope doing his entrance, and the Hardys do their broken thing on the steps.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Can we do a little bit of role play here for 2 seconds?
Sure.
Okay. You're going to be a receptionist, okay?
Okay.
The phone's ringing. Pick up the phone.
Okay. Hello, this is Uncle Ray's Discount Dentistry. May I help you?
No. Try it again. Just say this is WWE.
Oh, a WWE receptionist. Okay. World Wrestling Entertainment.
Hi there. My name's Dave. I am from the USA Network. And I just wanted to let you guys know, we have a new really shitty show coming out soon called Unsolved. And we want to send one of our actors to your TV show on Monday.
Oh, we love shitty actors. And, you know, I don't know how you were planning on promoting the show, but might we suggest making them interact with our on-screen personalities?
We did a survey with our pool boy, John, and he said that apparently if the guy commentates one of your wrestling matches, the your audience are going to be really keen to know more about that television show. So I think we should do that.
Yeah, that sounds like a really brilliant idea. I think that he should come out and say, how much does this guy weigh every time that he sees somebody?
And ladies and gentlemen, that is the stupidity that I feel happened last week for Josh. What is it, Duhamel?
I always say Duhamel, and everybody always corrects me and says Dumal.
Dumal. Okay. Josh.
So
Dumal.
It's Duhamel. Fuck him. Duhamel. It's Duhamel now. Yeah.
It's like Goldberg does. Is it right? I'm going to spell it for you. Tell me how you say it. Muay and then tie.
Muay. That would be Muay Thai.
See, I think it's Muay Thai, but apparently it's Muay Thai.
Muay Thai. Well, I mean,
it doesn't sound right.
It's a different language too, though, right? Like, I see a lot of stuff in Japanese whenever I'm reading that crap for work, and I'll go, "Wow, I think it's pronounced like this," and then it ends up being the other way around. So at least there's a language gap. Duhamel? No, your name's Duhamel. It's spelled Duhamel. It's Duhamel, not Dumal. Where's you know what it actually is? It's Duhamel. That's what it's going to be because he's dumb. I don't like him. There you go.
So with that in mind,
he was dreadful on commentary, by the way.
Of course he was.
He came out and he's like, "This is my first time ever being here, and all you guys with your play wrestling, it's really fun to watch you guys fake it all." I'm just like, oh god.
And this man was in Transformers.
Well, I mean, apropos, right?
I mean, let's be honest. If we want to save the world of movies, let's just eliminate Michael Bay from Earth. But you know,
right?
fuck me. So we have this six-man tag lasts about 18 minutes, and the Hardys and Finn Balor get the victory. It was the match was fine, but it all felt like a bit like a backdrop to Josh and his plugs. Sadly.
Kenny, we're going to do a little bit of role play here too, okay?
Sure.
You're going to be Kenny from today, and I'm going to be David from a year ago today, okay?
Okay.
You have to explain to me that someone from NXT is feuding with Finn Balor on the main roster, okay?
Okay.
Without really giving it away, so hit me. You just entered the vortex and came through on the other side.
Hey, David.
Kenny. Ah, what are you doing in my house? Oh, it's Kenny. Kenny, hi. Oh my God, how did you get here?
You're a fucking idiot. hey, David. I'm here from the future, and I just wanted to tell you that. All is okay because Finn Balor is coming to the main roster. And,
Finn Balor's going to be on Raw or SmackDown?
He's going to be on Raw, and it's all good because they're going to promote and they're going to tease and they're going to deliver one day Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar. I want you to know that. I want you to know that's going to happen. So don't worry about Finn. But before that, they want to give Finn...
Who's he feuding with right now, though? Well, that's in the future.
They want to give Finn a little bit of a rub first, so they're putting Finn with someone from NXT.
My God.
They're putting Finn...
Oh, my God!
An NXT mainstay.
Is it Shinsuke?
No. It's an NXT mainstay. Someone who's got a real different sort of charisma about them. It's someone who kind of... you know, they drifted about NXT for a little while, and they really captured the moment whenever they were on screen.
Oh, God, it's Samoa Joe. I can't believe it. We're getting Samoa Joe and Finn Balor on the main show?
Not yet. We will. This guy, he's a little bit more subtle than Samoa Joe. He doesn't come out and smash people. Like, takes a little, and he's kind of like a fine... You know, like that way when you're younger, you maybe don't like eating peppers, and you're like, ugh, don't get me peppers. And then when you're older, you're like, oh, peppers aren't too bad. that's kind of what this guy's like. Like, at first you're like, oh my god, die! And then you kind of like, oh well, they're not that bad. There could be worse. They're not Titus O'Neil.
So it's somebody who was like a mainstay in NXT for a while.
Yep.
And sort of grew as a character. Ty Dillinger's going to be there fighting.
No, he's going to be doing Sonic ads on SmackDown.
Oh, that's kind of where I predicted that he would be.
But
that's
they're funny.
Sad.
They're funny.
Well, of course they are. I love Ty Dillinger. He is funny, but.
But you know, but listen, this guy's got a mean streak to him as well, so it's better. You know, it's a better fit for Finn to especially rough him up for Brock.
Wait a minute, is this the revival? Are you teasing me with the revival?
No, they got injured.
Oh.
So
God, Kenny, I just don't.
I mean, I don't know how you're not getting it. I mean, he's an NXT mainstay. He has a serious side. He's got a different kind of charisma. He drifted about a little bit. I mean, it's very obvious who I'm talking about.
Eric Young?
Finn Balor in 1 year's time, David. I need to go because the future is calling me. But Finn Balor is going to be feuding in 1 year with the Drifter, Elias Samson.
That's the sound of me blowing my fucking brains out because Finn Balor is feuding with the Drifter, Elias Samson, who couldn't even get fucking 5 minutes out of a goddamn NXT house show a year ago. But now he's taking up 15 or 18 or whatever fucking minutes on Raw. Good Lord,
David! Are you trying to say there's something wrong with Elias Samson being the guy to propel Finn Balor to the heights he needs to be at to face Brock Lesnar?
They want to know why the fucking ratings are down. All the fucking Drifter made them all drift away from the fucking TV.
So Finn and the Hardys win the match, and David's happy about it. But luckily we were taken back to a time when we were less jaded. We go back to 1995 because there's a Shattered Dreams video with Goldust. He talks about how the fans could feel it and taste it. Not gonna go there. He said the Shattered Truth would hit Hollywood, and he's kind of, you know, teasing what's gonna happen, and Goldust makes his entrance, and he basically has his 1995-96 gear on.
Yeah, and he looks great in it. Like
I mean, I watched this with Sandra, who granted is more focused on gear than I am.
Sure.
But her exact words were, "I'm not comfortable knowing that Goldust dick lies to the right of his pants."
I reiterate, he looked great in it.
And also, there is no way to make that gear look flattering. There's just not.
But that was my point, though, is like, whenever I saw that he was coming out in this, I was like, oh my god, he's going to look so flat. It's so fat, right? But no, man, he's in like the best shape of his career, even still.
No,
right?
he's in great shape. I just think the gear needs a little tweaking. That's all. He has the
it
gold.
Let out the crotch a little bit.
A little bit. Let it breathe. Let it breathe.
Right.
And
right.
He
yeah.
brought
yeah,
a gold.
You don't want a stranglehold there. You don't want to cut off blood circulation too much.
You know, a little bit can be fun, but you know, that's just whatever you're into. But Goldust had a gold cameraman with him. And the guy was sort of like filming for the feature. The issue is, it feels to me like the decision to have a cameraman dressed in the gold suit was decided around 3 p.m. LA time.
Yeah.
And they went to the local Halloween store and looked for the pedophile game show host gear and found this suit, which didn't fit the guy. It looked... I've worked for wrestling companies, and I've been involved in last-minute decisions, and this was a last-minute decision. I can assure you.
I'm hoping it doesn't come back next week.
I'm hoping he can get a tailor to fit it.
I don't like the cameraman at all. I think that's a stupid thing.
Can you imagine if he got Marlena back?
Oh, for fuck's sake. I would crawl to whatever arena that would be to see that. And knees crawling. Kenny.
So R-Truth comes out and R-Truth ends up getting attacked by Goldust. And Goldust... So what Goldust does is he attacks Truth, punches him a couple times, pulls him towards the post, and stood on the second rope over R-Truth. And R-Truth appeared to be just broken.
Just dead. He sold this like somebody just came out and shot him in the abdomen.
Now, I am not one to pick apart wrestling, wrestlers doing their craft, but it felt to me like Goldust hit two punches and R-Truth died.
Yeah.
Had we not watched 20 minutes before, Roman Reigns being flung off a fucking stage, off a fucking ambulance, I just think this attack could have been a little bit stronger, right?
Yeah, no, you're definitely not alone in thinking this. It made R-Truth look like a big wiener, for lack of a not for lack of a better term, but to keep with the theme of Goldust suit, it made R-Truth look like a big dork and a big wiener. So, like, to me, I don't know, man. This really fell flat from what I was expecting, especially after a month's build for it, you know? And then just to see him, like, you know, whenever R-Truth got rammed into there, into the abdomen, it immediately popped into my head that thing that you said about what The Undertaker said whenever he got hurt, which was, "Ow, that hurt!"
Good times.
I need to make that my ringtone whenever you call me. It's just you going, "Ow, that hurt."
I'm open to it.
Maybe you could start coming out to like the Test theme song, only instead of test, this is a test. You could just go, "Ow, that hurt," and over again.
Here's a challenge for any listeners. So the Test theme song would go, test, this is a test. And then the guy would go, hey. What is he saying? Can anyone decipher what the fuck he's saying?
No one knows. But I will give a imaginary dollar to anyone who makes the Test theme song with, instead of test, this is a test, ow, that hurt. That would...
awful audacity edits that we're gonna get in the next week. The Goldust thing I think was a little bit of a letdown, but I don't think it's dead by any means. I think they can pull it back. Just a disappointing transition into the live experience. But what was not disappointing was Charlie could also speak to Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman said, you know, the Staples Center is on fire because his client's gonna be on Raw. And he's going to call it Samoa Joe for a fight. And then Samoa Joe turns up and puts Paul Heyman in a coquina clutch position without fully applying the hold, holds on to him and says, "You're just an advocate. This is meant for Brock Lesnar." And then releases him. Oh my God, this was great. But
any time that these two get together, it's just the best thing on television. Like, you want money? You can print it by putting these two on TV together.
So then we go from that to Miz TV. Now, the good thing is Maurice is still around, which I'm very happy about because I think Miz and Maurice are fucking great. So I'm glad they're still.
Though after this whole segment, though, she was kind of like cheering and staying with them as a team. And it just...
Good.
It feels very... Right. No, it is good, but it's very disjointed from what they're trying to say. It's saying one thing and doing another, and I always hate that. You can't be half pregnant.
Take it over her going at this point. For now.
No, I would too. I'd rather have bad TV for a few weeks than a bad angle for months. So
who is LeVar Ball?
I was supposed to answer this earlier and we got very ranty. So LaVar Ball is a former basketball player who, from what I gather, was pretty mediocre to middling. Like, I didn't really know too much about him. I have a very elementary standing of basketball, but like, I know who the big stars are. For instance, Chris Paul joined the same team as James Harden today. And I've heard of both of those guys, and if I've heard of them, then they must be good. So that's for anybody who watches the NBA, who listens to this, you kind of understand where I'm getting at. I'm not wonderful with it, but I have a basic understanding of it. So LaVar Ball, I didn't really know too much about until he retired and started talking. So he's one of those guys. He's a Stephen A. Smith. Or the type of guy who goes on talk show, sports talk radio and whatnot, and runs his mouth and says, I'm the greatest of all time, blah, 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 even though he's dog shit, right? Now, his son is Lonzo Ball. Not the one that we'll get into later, his other son, but the current one who's in the news, Lonzo Ball. He just went second overall in the NBA draft. A lot of people think he will be a star in the NBA. He's apparently an excellent passer and a decent shooter. So he'll be a very good player, possibly an all-star or MVP type. The reason that Vince McMahon wanted him in this situation, he got drafted second overall by the Los Angeles Lakers, the same team that Shaq and Kobe Bryant played on together that won many championships. And they've been bad ever since then. So this is like their resurgence. And Vince McMahon knew that this would be the first time that Lonzo Ball would be in the Staples Center. And being in the Staples Center for the first time in a WWE ring for a guy who could be a superstar, that's a big deal. That's a Sports Center moment type thing, right? And a lot of people shit on the idea. I don't think the idea itself was a bad idea. Because LaVar Ball is a keg, he's a keg of dynamite.
It's such a great name. Such a great name. LaVar Ball.
It is. LaVar Ball. And he is a keg of dynamite, and it could blast and it could be entertaining, or he could blast and a bunch of people get injured. Right? So
either way,
you don't really know what you're getting.
What struck me with this segment is that I know a lot of younger wrestling fans really struggle to understand Jim Cornette and his thought process on wrestling and his views on different things. And
sure.
I get that the way he expresses it is very, very aggressive.
Unapologetic is how I would describe it.
Yeah, that's it. Unapologetic. But I think that what people should realize about him, or what I would say, my opinion would be, is this segment should never have happened. Lonzo Ball, I find it very, very difficult to say that with being serious, but Lonzo Ball and LaMelo Ball, for fuck's sake, the yogurts. his other son, Petty Falou, couldn't make it, but the
Oikos did make it, though. He was just in the crowd.
Activia was late, but so... the thing is,
my favorite Go-Gurt was in preschool, though. Go-Gurt could not make it.
The thing is, if somebody said, "Here's Activia Ball," it doesn't sound any more ridiculous than other names.
No, it doesn't.
But the thing is, like, in wrestling, there's so many examples of good celebrity appearances. Hugh Jackman, a couple of years ago, great.
Sure. Bob
Barker, Mike Tyson, Dennis Rodman, Muhammad Ali, so many.
Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence Taylor put on a decent match with Bam Bam Bigelow despite not being a wrestler, you guys. Come on, give him a little bit of love.
But see, LaVar Ball, I'm very skeptical to say if this was 1985. In a lot of ways, the world is better than it was in 1985, and it's a lot more equal in a lot of ways. But you know one thing that I wish it was 1985 for? LaVar Ball would have got punched in the fucking face for being disrespectful to wrestling, being disrespectful.
Imagine Roddy Piper.
Oh, he would have fucking nutted him. LaVar Ball stood there for the whole thing, trying to pop his kids, trying to see be the big man. And The Miz, who is the Intercontinental Champion, one of the top stars on the show, and I get he's supposed to be a shitbag, and that's part of his gimmick, but The Miz was above having to deal with this bullshit. LeVar Ball can go suck a fuck. He's an old man who has no business getting in a wrestling ring. And they've got mannequins with his fucking t-shirts on.
Yep.
Like, this was all suck. Just so Lonzo fucking Ball. Do you know what? Get Lonzo Ball a nice lady for him to fornicate with and bring him out to the front row and just be like, hey guys, here's Lonzo Ball, the latest number one draft pick for the LA Lakers. And you would have got a nice applause, people would have popped, and we could have moved the fuck on. This was an abortion of a segment, and I'm sorry The Miz had to be a part of it. LeVar Ball, ugh, fuck off.
So my question to you, and it's been rampant in the Inside the Ropes fan community on Facebook, my question to you is, what segment was worse, this or the This Is Your Life with Alexa Bliss?
This.
To me, it is the This Is Your Life segment, and it's not close.
I'll tell you why I think this wins. I think if you are a non-wrestling fan and you watch this, I think that this looks like wrestling is just... I mean, don't get me wrong. This Is Your Life was terrible. Terrible.
See, I think they're both just as bad on that spectrum.
The reason I think this is worse is because I just think that having a non-wrestler come out just trying to pop his kids, and his kids are sitting there laughing, and he's just allowed to, like, break the N-word out. It's not for me.
The reason I think that the This Is Your Life segment is worse is they knew that this would be a keg of dynamite, and they couldn't control it. That's the difference. As to where with the This Is Your Life segment, that was something that they pre-approved of. They came up with it. They wrote it. They produced it. It is a product of the WWE's creative system and the creative environment within WWE. I think that's why the This Is Your Life segment is much worse than this, as to where this came off the rails because of an outside force. They gave these guys live mics and told them, hey, you can improvise. And they went out there and made a mockery of the business and said the N-word twice. So to me, I can't fully blame. Yes, the WWE gave them the platform, but they didn't hand them a script and say, hey, do all of this. It's going to get over real well, like they did with the This Is Your Life segment.
I get, like, that's a very fair opinion.
Thank you.
But I think we are basically arguing about who had a better shit.
Touche.
We both had a shit. Let's try and move on.
Try to flush that motherfucker down the toilet.
We had a six-man tag out of that with Dean Ambrose, Heath Slater, and Rhino against The Miz, Curtis Axel, and Bo Dallas, the Miztourage. And the Miztourage got the win. At least they got a win, and we didn't have to look at LeVar anymore.
Just terrible. Just a horrible, horrible, horrible thing.
Horrible. Enzo Amore comes out, does his full entrance. Fans were pretty receptive to him. Cass comes out, and Enzo kind of says, you know, I'm not going to accept that you did this to me, and we're family, and you're not leaving here until we win the tag team titles, and all that sort of stuff. And he really tries to, you know, appeal to Cass's emotional side, and Cass comes round. He says he's never been so ashamed, and, you know, he's sorry, and please accept my apology. And Enzo's emotional, and they hug, and it's a really cool moment. And Cass does the soft thing, and they're all leaving, and Michael Cole saying, you know, you've got to give Cass credit, he's been a man about it. And they leave, and they get to the top of the stage, they raise each other's hands, and Cass clotheslines the shit out of Enzo, picks him up, and throws him down the ramp. I thought this was a very well done segment, and they both performed very well.
Yeah, no, this was fantastic. I actually bought it. I'm man enough to admit it. I bought it. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder where they're going to go from here with this. Is this going to be like a thing where they take the titles off of Cesaro and Sheamus, and then after that they do the breakup? Or I wonder where. And then all of a sudden the clothesline came, and I was like, God damn it, I'm an idiot.
But listen, if they can get somebody like you, they've done their job.
No, and it's a testament to them. I know a lot of people will say, oh, I saw it from a million miles out, and I could sit here and lie and tell you that, but a lot of those people are also lying. A lot of them bought it hook, line, and sinker as well. So the fact that they were able to get me to fall for it, yeah, I've been watching this shit a long time. So kudos to them. Cass tried to lift Enzo up over his head and almost hard way dropped him and kind of saved it at the very end. These two were excellent during this segment. I think, and I've always said this, I know there's a whole lot of hate on the internet for Enzo and in the locker room. And I know that he's just not generally well liked. I will swear up and down, even though it is not the most popular opinion, Enzo, no matter what, will always have a place on the card. He's one of those guys. He is so charismatic. He has the catchphrases. A lot of people always say, oh, Enzo and Cass aren't over. Get them off the screen, blah, blah, blah. Yet they get one of the biggest reactions whenever they come out. Being over with the internet community isn't everything. A lot of it is the live crowd and how they react. And the crowd, they generally always really liked Enzo and Cass together. And now that they made Enzo the sympathetic person coming out of this, he's going to be very well over with the crowd for a very long time. We can sit here, Kenny, and we can talk about how boring Randy Orton is and blah, blah, blah. But every time he comes out, he gets a reaction. That's more and a positive reaction, not one of those Roman Reigns reactions to where, oh, well, he's getting a reaction, so blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Black is white, right is wrong. It's like, no. He gets a positive reaction. I hate Randy Orton. But the guy gets cheered whenever he comes out. And a lot of people may not like it, but the same can be said for Enzo. He gets cheered when he comes out.
I think Enzo's showed some real chops the last few weeks with this stuff, so... you know, I was very, very critical of the stuff he did with Rusev and Lana. Stand by it, but you know, he's doing good stuff right now, and I think that
and how much of that is on the performer versus the person who hands the performer a piece of paper with what's on it?
Yeah, no, that's true. But then you know, it's like me. It's like if I brought somebody up to a Q&A and they say something, it's kind of on me as well. You know, it's on everybody. But I think he's doing really well right now, and then obviously Cass confronted Corey Graves, you know, a little bit of a tease to the whatever dirt was on Kurt Angle, and I like the Corey Graves involvement. I'm very curious to see why he's being involved. I do like him being a focus of the show. I kind of like that he's, like I said it before, like a modern day Jesse Ventura,
right?
Which I enjoy.
No, just really good stuff. Riveting television. Which is not something you get to say every week about Raw.
Seth Rollins defeated Curt Hawkins in a quick match, and then after the match, Bray Wyatt appeared on screen. Said July 9th will be the day of Seth's reclamation and be true to himself or burn. Good promo from Bray. Felt a bit like most of the promos he does. I'm sure Seth and Bray will have a very good match at Great Balls of Fire. But the feud, for whatever reason, isn't really setting my world on fire. How about you?
That's because it's a one-sided feud, you know? Bray comes out and he says the stuff that he always says, and you know he's going to lose to Seth Rollins, so who cares?
It's very hard to come up with a follow-up question to that, David.
Sometimes you got to tell it like it is, Kenny.
It's like if you're on your deathbed going, why should we plan to see me next week? I'm dying. Cool. Pass the grapes.
I'm a realist, Kenny. I gotta tell it like it is.
Paul Heyman is in the ring, and he talks about, you know, Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar, and he cuts a very good promo, and then he introduces Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar comes out to a load of cheers, does his kind of, you know, wee jig at the top of the ramp, and he is attacked from behind by Samoa Joe, who applies a Kikina clutch to him. Lesnar, you know, people say he turns red, Brock Lesnar literally turned red to the point where his eyebrows were white.
He
tried spinning around. He pushed Joe into the video wall, pushed him in again. Joe was throwing knees at him. He had got the hold applied. He was about to knock him out. And then the Revival, Carl Anderson, some referees all had to pull Joe off. Fans chatting, let them fight. Brock Lesnar looked vulnerable, dazed, and was trying to get his bearings. And I've got to say, like, people can say what they want about the current product, but I don't think there is any way they could be presenting Brock Lesnar versus Samoa Joe in a better way than they are. And I'm really, really excited about it. And I think it's one of the best programs I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it's not even close. This is the hot summer feud. I don't care if SummerSlam will not feature a follow-up with these guys. It's still the hot feud of the summer. This is the match that we're going to remember, I think, from the summer of 2017, a few years from now. I mean, a lot can change, and, you know, it may be a stinker of a match. I don't know, but the build's been phenomenal, man.
The thing is, you know, Brock Lesnar, I've got to give Brock Lesnar a lot of credit here, because in the last 9 months, he has taken more risks in WWE than he has in the entire time he's been back, and I think it's made him a better performer.
Yeah, he needed to, you know? And kudos to Joe, man.
But you know the thing is, McMahon's... Lesnar, I don't think he did need to. Lesnar could have coasted on being Lesnar. The fact that he did when he could have coasted is what I kind of find so commendable about it.
I think he needed to in the eyes of the fans, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. But I mean, that's like you know, when The Rock comes back, he just does his shtick.
He doesn't challenge anything.
He doesn't give you anything
Randy
new.
Orton, ladies and gentlemen, do we need to say anything further?
Randy Orton, you know, like there's people who just give you the bare minimum and give you the kind of basic performance, and that's fine. You can get away with it, but Brock's taking some chances.
Let's hold our praise for Lesnar until we end up seeing what he does in the match.
But I even think in the lead up, his performances in the lead up, you know, let him allowing Samoa Joe to do that to him was key, and even the headbutt last week, 2 weeks ago. And all that stuff, like he's allowing Samoa Joe to look like an equal.
And can we agree, by the way, that in retrospect, Joe winning was the proper person to win?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Like, this is way better than anything they could have done in that time frame with Finn Balor, or certainly Seth Rollins. So
I think Samoa Joe is going to come out of this as a major star.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Win or lose, and he is definitely losing. Sorry, guys. Win or lose, he will be a bigger star than than whenever he entered the feud by a lot.
We had a cruiserweight match with Neville and Lince Dorado. Neville beat Lince very quickly, and then Akira Tozawa came out. Titus O'Neil came with a mic and, you know, say, you know, don't fight for free, and they're going to fight Great Balls of Fire, Neville and Akira Tozawa.
Don't fight for free. Titus Brand.
Jesus Christ. I have nothing to say about it. Do you have anything to say?
It was what it was, you know.
It absolutely. You're correct. It was. It totally was what it was.
Indeed, it was.
It was. It existed. Exactly what it happened. Was. It happened. Charlie Caruso spoke to Paul Heyman. He cut... One of my favorite promos he's cut in years, where he talks about, you know, Samoa Joe is the Samoan that people, the Samoan that the Samoans dislike. He said that, you know, Joe had to sneak up on Lesnar, and that if Joe applied the Kikina clutch, then Lesnar would have a problem. Lesnar's going to have his back up against the wall so that Joe can't beat it from behind. And he says, as a promoter, he loves this. It's going to be down and dirty. And Lesnar will finally take Joe to Suplex City. And he said that Samoa Joe will wake up in the trainer's room and say, dear God, is that what it's like to fight the Beast? Goodness gracious, Great Balls of Fire. Paul fucking Heyman. Ladies and gentlemen, my God, he is good.
You know that Vince handed him that and says, you got to work Great Balls of Fire into this. You got to work the lyrics to Jerry Lee Lewis's Great Balls of Fire into your promo. And then he just took it and ran with it, because he's Paul Heyman and he can do whatever the fuck he wants to, and it's going to be amazing.
He the man.
Yep.
We got Alexa Bliss backstage. Throughout the night, we had kind of segments about this would be the first ever women's gauntlet match to determine who the number one contender is for Alexa Bliss at Great Balls of Fire. So there's various points where like the women are picking their numbers. So we get a segment here where Alexa Bliss approaches Nia Jax and, you know, asks her what number she's got. And Nia Jax is like, you know, wouldn't you like to know? And they have a kind of back and forth. And Bliss is kind of, you know, obviously trying to get on Nia Jax's good side. She's wishing her luck. And Nia Jax says she doesn't need it and she'd see it at Great Balls of Fire. Nice tease leading into the match because obviously Alexa's trying to get the monster on side.
Yeah.
So the women go on to have about a 30-minute match where, you know, Bayley is eliminated very quickly by Nia Jax. The whole match is basically a Nia Jax show. She takes out Bayley. She takes out Mickie James. She takes out Dana Brooke. My favorite bit was when Dana Brooke tried to do the Snooki handstand thing, and Nia Jax just battered her on the back of the head. loved it. She takes out Emma, and it comes down to Sasha and Nia Jax, and I thought they booked this incredibly well because, you know, Nia Jax was dominating, and then when she's kind of tired and she's been beating loads of women up, Sasha catches her in a standing bank statement. Nia Jax tries to toss her aside. It doesn't quite work, and she's in a modified bank statement on the ground. She's dropped her knees on it because it's standing up initially, and then Sasha, you know, nails it, makes sure it's applied properly, and Nia has to tap, and Sasha becomes the number one contender. Kurt Angle comes out, raises her hand, and then Alexa Bliss comes out. Sasha nails her and teases that she's going to win the belt. I thought this was a great main event. I thought Nia Jax had a great performance. I thought it was just as much about Nia Jax as it was about Sasha Banks for me, and I'm glad that they were both featured. And I'm more interested in the women's division on Raw than I have been in a good few months. And I think they set up some good stuff here.
No, they really did. They completely salvaged Sasha. And it's sort of a blessing in disguise, too, that they didn't turn her heel against Bayley.
Oh, my because God. Can you imagine?
Could you imagine? You know? So, this is really, really riveting stuff. I really enjoyed how they managed to get both performers over. Bayley takes a huge hit here, but I mean, at this point, she's free falling.
But
she's got to do something.
She needed to take a huge hit here. She needs to try and rebuild somehow in some way.
They need to demolish that character and rebuild it. And I think maybe just having her leave TV for like 6 months, I think that's the best possible way. Well, just try to get
Kyle Burdick,
get the stink off.
Kyle Burdick, our good close personal friend.
Wonderful human.
Put on the Facebook community a kind of meme about, you know, things are bad when even your super fan turns heel on you. And it's Izzy wearing the Alexa Bliss gear.
Yep.
Folks, I'm going to break some to you. Izzy is a glory hog. That is all she is. If Izzy was my child, I'd be like, listen, you have some fucking self-respect, hen. You support your fucking hero no matter what. I supported my hero through racism. You fucking support yours. Right? If she's just gonna in 2 months walk down to Walmart and get a fucking leather jacket and be like, oh, now I'm Alexa Bliss. Now Alexa Bliss is my favorite. Fuck off. No backbone.
I saw a meme actually that really cracked me up. It was I can't think of the exact verbiage, but it showed the before and after with the Bayley stuff and then the Alexa stuff, and it basically said, "No, Dad, you're an alcoholic. I love Raven now." referencing the ECW Sandman and Raven gimmick, where Raven abducted Sandman's son and forced him against him. So pretty great.
Good times.
Yeah, good times in ECW lore.
I'm going to give this Raw a 7.5 out of 10. I thought it was a lot of good stuff on it. I think it was let down a lot by LaVar Ball and his fucking children. But I think there was enough really good stuff on it. They've salvaged the women's division. Samoa Joe, Brock Lesnar is a hot feud. those things on the show, and the Enzo and Cass segment, and the Roman and Braun segment. I think they've got a lot of hot stuff coming into Great Balls of Fire, and I thought that those hot angles offset the awful segment that was Miz and the Balls.
The non-wrestling stuff on this show was excellent, and the only wrestling stuff that really gripped me was the main event, which was phenomenal. I think due to that, I always enjoy wrestling more than the angles, not to the point of some smarks, but I think I'll give it a 7 out of 10. The Enzo and Cass stuff was probably the highlight of the show for me. I really enjoyed that. The main event, just great, riveting TV. They somehow managed to turn that ship around, I think. Getting Bayley away from the main event and putting a excellent worker in the ring with Alexa and Sasha, because Sasha is arguably the best wrestler the WWE main women's division rosters have. I would still prefer Charlotte, but a lot of people say Sasha, and I'm not going to argue with him about it. So, yeah, those two things alone were excellent bullet points, but then you add on the Joe and Lesnar stuff. Woo! Really good. Excellent stuff. Too bad the other wrestling on the card wasn't that great. So, 7 out of 10.
I want to give a quick shout-out to a couple of people in Manchester. Ben Day came up to us, came up to me in Manchester, and a sign that I'm speaking to a podcast listener is when they come up and say, so, gender, eh? also, a shout-out to Innes McVeigh, who runs our Facebook community, because Innes decided and had asked me that I need to wear a Jinder Mahal t-shirt in Glasgow. And a lot of people were saying, you know, you weren't wearing it. You sold out, you backtracked, you chickened out. It's not what happened. Innes McVeigh did not deliver the shirt.
Oh.
But then what he did deliver was something very different. He delivered a homemade Jinder Mahal shirt, where in felt tip pen, it was written, I love Jinder Mahal. That was not my agreement. And if you think I was going to walk about, you fucking motherfucker, in a professional environment, you think I'm going to walk up to fucking Goldberg and be like, Bill, we're on in 10 minutes with a fucking I love Jinder Mahal t-shirt on. You are off your fucking rocker.
You, no matter what, guys, no matter what, you have to spring the money and get the official WWE t-shirt. That's what you have to do,
because
right?
those t-shirt ducats, if I can borrow a phrase from my friend Ross, they are going to help construct the glory that is the Punjabi prison. So you need to buy the shirt so they can construct the prison that we all are going to feel like we are in on July 23rd.
You have to. That's just you've got to do it. Come on, you guys.
I also want to give a shout out to Victoria, who is coming to all three Goldberg shows. Your dedication is very, very commendable. Thank you very much.
Huge shout out to her, because she said that Goldberg was putting my catchphrase over.
I said to her, I was like, don't you tell that fucker that he said, here's the thing. And she said, it's too late. And I was like, he's gonna have that. David McCutcheon, if you ever listen to the Jim Cornette Experience, David McCutcheon is like a St. Louis version of Kenny Bolin. Like, Kenny Bolin has, like, WWE Hall of Fame mentionee. Like, that's something that David would do. He is Kenny Bolin through and through.
I wish I had the diet of Kenny Bolin. I'd be a lot happier as a human.
And finally, a shout out to one of our listeners, Nicholas, who is from Germany, has been living in the UK, came to the Manchester show, and he's moving back to Germany. Can't say I blame him in the current climate here. But yeah, thanks, Nicholas, for coming along to the shows. I know when you're a student, it's very hard to afford things, so I appreciate you coming along to Goldberg. And thanks to everyone else.
Do not forget John Scott Massey, who repped the Inside the Ropes t-shirt on SmackDown.
I was going to wait to SmackDown somebody, but yeah, let's fucking plug this guy twice.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's give him a golf clap.
John, you are the man. And I've got to laugh. So Corey, who's part of our crew, Corey thinks a lot of inside the ropes, which is obviously great. And he said, Kenny, I was thinking about this, and I think WWE are looking for the shirts now. I don't know if like the three that we've sold in America are really being looked for, but it's great if they are.
It's a comforting thought.
It is a comfort thought, and they'll be back in stock soon, folks. If you want to take an Inside the Ropes t-shirt to your next television taping, then please feel free. We would love to see your t-shirts on television. But
we will retweet that shit. We'll do all sorts of stuff.
And if you decide you want to take a sign saying Inside the Ropes, that's absolutely fine, and we would appreciate that. But please do me one personal favor. Don't be the dick that holds up the sign during a match. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Because
it's very rude. Don't do that.
It's just a prick move. That's a what culture thing to do. Anyway.
definitely, no matter what, do not print out a gigantic sign of Kenny's head. His head's big enough as is, folks.
Honestly, like all joking aside, please, even if you think it's funny, please never do that, because those people are the biggest arseholes on the planet. Like,
right.
I can't.
It's not anything about Kenny. It's more about how all the fans around you will judge you as a person.
Yeah, I'll get it all. And, you know, like, the Colt Cabana head was fun at the time, but why are you printing a head of yourself? Where do you go to get that done?
That's what I would like to know.
Like, where do you go? By the way, can you print my head out to be like the size of a house?
How much does that even cost?
And like, why do they let it in to the building?
Yeah,
why do you
yeah.
Like, yeah, so many questions. David, where can people find you on Twitter?
Feel free to verbally abuse me on Twitter at Zoopsoul. That's ZOOPSOUL. No cash for gold. Just stealing Jeff Jarrett's catchphrase, like he steals your money whenever you sell him your Nana's gold.
So from me, Kenny McIntosh, the president of Inside the Ropes, I'd like to thank David, I'd like to thank David, the chief creative officer of Inside the Ropes. I'd like to thank Sondra, who's in the other room drinking vodka, the coup, the chief operating officer. You know, make sure, guys, you know, just while you still can, go online and watch some of the greatest moments in Global Force Wrestling history. Watch your favorite matches, your favorite pay-per-views, your favorite DVDs of all.
Who could forget that 60-minute Broadway that defined Global Force Wrestling?
Phone your friends.
Like, my goodness,
Phone your friends and just reminisce. You know, I can feel What Culture right now making a top 10 list about the top 10 greatest moments in Global Force Wrestling history. We all should celebrate Global Force Wrestling and all they've accomplished in their 3 years with no significant presence in the wrestling world. But you know what? All joking aside, Jeff Jarrett is a fucking genius. He is genuinely a genius. Because he has managed to go into a corporation and hand them a steaming pile of shit, and they have given him money for it. If anyone wants to be an entrepreneur, you can learn something from Uncle Jeff.
Yeah.
Which is, talk it up, because you never know what fucking idiot will buy it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening.
In the immortal words of the Steve Miller Band, take the money and run.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
So long, everybody.
Every day I'm on my way to that job, like it's my destiny to be bigger. Yeah, I got fight. And all that visions are sitting high on my own gold throne. Never listening to criticism, I built my